Hand off to Foster, big hole up the middle, 40, 45, 50, here he goes, 30, 20, one man to beat, 10, he's gone! Kendrick Foster strikes again, 64 yards, and a Fighting Illini touchdown! Illinois in victory formation, and they're going to win on Dad's Day.
Best formation in sports.
8 seconds left, look at him hug Jeff George Jr.
Beautiful.
The redshirt freshman on Dad's Day in his third start leads Illinois to a victory over Michigan State. This one is over, and for the first time since 1956, the Illini have defeated number one, and they have shaken up the BCS standings.
It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana. We'll get you caught up on your Illini sports news, along with other area and national sports news. Here are Lauren Tate and Michael Kaiser.
Good Saturday morning. Thanks for joining us. We're live from Memorial Stadium here in Champaign. Week one of the 2017 Illini football season, just 3 hours away. Kickoff against the Ball State Cardinals. Year two for Lovie Smith. We'll see what happens here in his second season at the helm of the Illini football program. You could join us today, 356-9397. Texas on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Listen live at WDWS.com. Also send us emails, talk@WDWS.com. Lauren Tate, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Isn't this something to look down and see the band covering that entire football field right in front of us? Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of high school bands here this morning as the annual band day. Usually they have it like the second or third week of the season. But they're having the opening week here this year. Bands from all over the state are here. And so it's really a fun day for them, and it's a big undertaking for Barry Houser to get all these bands together.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
Get everybody in sync.
Yeah, that's the tough part. I mean, these are high school kids. So, but it's a fun day for them and a good experience. And I actually have my niece down there on the field right now and
good.
From Pena. So I'll throw Pena out.
All right.
Not much else. But anyway, the game kicks off at 11 o'clock this morning. Illini game day comes up at 9:30, then the network broadcast, and 11 o'clock will be the kickoff against Ball State. Our guest lineup today, Jim Dye, will be at 8:30, and then former Illini Jay Lehman will be in the booth with us at 9 o'clock to talk about Ball State, give us his thoughts on the Illini football team. And Lauren, it's been talked about over and over and over again, but a really, really young team, 54 freshmen / redshirt freshmen and 22 sophomores to make up 76 of the 101 players. It's a really, really young team.
Yeah, and the thing that's interesting about it is that Ball State comes in here with basically the same kind of a problem. They've got an awful young team as well. Mm-hmm. So this is two young teams. We'll see who the most talented is. We think Illinois's got a lot of talent on that freshman group, and, you know, that's been written about and talked about, and then now we'll see. The thing that comes back to me, and I wrote about it, is the fact that you've got a lot of players. Let's just take Williams at safety or let's say Adams at a corner. They've never tackled a guy in college yet. Their last time they tackled was in high school. I mean, the runners haven't been tackled, and the defenders haven't tackled. And that is huge because that's a big part of football, tackling. And Lovie just doesn't believe in it in practice. They've been mostly what we call thud practices where the line is 100%, but there's no tackling. So we'll see how it works out. But, you know, Jay Lehman, we'll have him here to talk about that. But Jay wouldn't like that as a linebacker.
No, we've talked to him before, and he likes to tackle, and he wants to tackle. He loved doing it. So we'll get Jay's thoughts on the fact. It seems like it's becoming a widespread thing where coaches are being more concerned about injuries, which I think is a smart move. But like you mentioned, those true freshmen have not tackled anybody at the collegiate level. And you and I talked about this the other day. High school players, how many on each team are really talented? Like maybe one or two that they face throughout the season on each team.
Yeah.
And they're facing a whole entire team of guys that are been in the strength and conditioning program at the collegiate level. And it's a whole different game trying to tackle a college football player.
Well, we got a depth chart today, but I don't put much faith. You know, we haven't had a depth chart yet, but now we got one, and I don't put too much faith in it because it has Jalen Dunlap at one of the cornerbacks, and he hasn't reported really for practice yet. He's been out there, but he's never practiced. But otherwise, I think the it's pretty interesting. As far as freshmen are concerned, we've got a freshman starting at offensive guard. I don't think there's any doubt Larry Boyd's going to start.
Sure.
And he's listed at 340 now, 6'6 and 340, and of course he's right ahead of Alex Posuski, and those two guys are going to play a lot. They're, out of the seven top linemen, they are definitely two of them.
Yeah, they definitely are. And Larry Boyd is a big guy, and he's been working on getting his weight down, and we'll see if he's able to get that down as the season moves along. And Joey Bose, the head strength and conditioning coach for the Illini football team, has been working with him, so we'll see how that translates in. And the one thing I want to mention is, you know, Ball State is young, but they have an experienced quarterback and an experienced running back, and James Gilbert, the running back, had nearly 1,400 yards last season. Riley Neal, the quarterback, you know, threw for 2,500 yards and 13 touchdowns, but he also had 12 interceptions, so he's prone to the turnover.
Yeah, he's 6'6", and Gilbert's 5'8", which, you know, the height of a running back doesn't really matter as long as he can run. But Neal's, for a 6'6 guy, he runs a lot, 540 yards on the ground, which is a lot of running. So he will scramble. Crouch will scramble. I think the one thing you'll see this year that's different from last year, when Illinois used Westlund or they used Jeff George Jr., those two guys didn't run last year. They were the main quarterbacks last season because Lunt got hurt. And you don't get any scrambling on third down. That's one reason why Illinois finished next to last in the country, 217 out of 218, whatever, something like that, in first downs. And time of possession was way down. I think there were 200, over 200 in time of possession. So if you don't possess the ball and you don't make first downs, it really throws it back to the defense a lot, and the defense was under a lot of pressure last year because the offense just didn't move the ball.
And the defense had trouble stopping the run, and they just that's not something they want to deal with today. And you mentioned that Riley Neal is 6'6". He's also 225 pounds and Ben Roethlisberger-esque in terms of size, so that'll be a difficult tackle for the especially the inexperienced Illini true freshman guys on the defensive side that we mentioned. So we'll see what transpires as things get underway against the Ball State Cardinals next week. Western Kentucky, then South Florida. After that, the first three games here of the 2017 season. Some other football news, college football news. The Lovie Smith and company got a commitment on Thursday night from Georgia quarterback Cordell Littlejohn, a consensus three-star recruit, is a 14th commitment in the 2018 class, the third this month. And then two top 25 games last night. Washington defeated Rutgers 30-14 in a game that was tighter than probably Washington would like. Washington 8th in the country, and then Wisconsin 9th in the country had no trouble beating Utah State 59-10.
Well, Utah State got off to a good start, though. I mean, but in all three of the games that I watched, it was Washington, Rutgers, of course, Ohio State, Indiana on Thursday, and the Wisconsin game. The underdog teams fought them for a while. And then the strength just took over.
Yeah, that's usually how that works in the games, especially with the top teams. Like, you know, Indiana, Ohio State the other night, it was tied early in the third quarter, and then Ohio State just ran away with that game.
Yeah, Indiana was actually ahead 21-20
in
the third quarter. But that doesn't – the games are won in the second half, and it's a battle of attrition. It's a battle of strength and attrition. It's just like a boxing match. The heavyweight champion doesn't come out and knock out his opponent in the first round. You beat him up, and then you knock him out, which is what we saw recently in the featured fight.
Yeah.
I guess you'd call it a fight. It was supposed to be a boxing match. I guess it was. But the
point, I didn't watch it on purpose.
I didn't either. I watched some of the replays. But my point is that you have to have the durability factor is huge. You beat a person, and you finally knock them out. And that's what Ohio State did, that's what Washington did, and that's what Wisconsin did.
Well, be thankful, Lauren, today we're not going to have happen to Illinois football what happened to Florida Atlantic and Navy last night. Three lightning delays, none of which happened until the fourth quarter. The game took nearly 6 hours, and after the third delay, they didn't start again until about 1 a.m. Eastern time.
I didn't know about that. I saw where Navy was winning pretty handily.
Yeah, 42-19. Lane Kiffin's debut did not go very well on many fronts. And so that's we're not going to have that today. A couple years ago, we had the Kent State Lightning delay in the week one, Bill Cubitt's first game at the helm, and they actually had to delay that game till the next day, but Florida Atlantic and Navy finished that game off last night. It's a big day for Illini basketball, too, Lauren, as well, with two official visits, Landers Nolly, the wing, and then Colin Castleton from Florida. Landers Nolly from Georgia, but it was originally from Chicago, and then tomorrow Jackson Hayes on an unofficial visit.
Tell me what the information you picked up last night from DePaul.
Oh, yes, that's another good thing to mention. La Lumiere, four-star point guard. He was previously a five-star point guard, was in the 2019 class. Now he's in the 2018 class, committed to DePaul, which, frankly, I know Shane Heierman, who's now an assistant to DePaul, was his head coach at La Lumiere, so it made sense Tiger Campbell was going to commit to there. But at the same time, I was like, why are you going to DePaul? I mean, they haven't won hardly any games the last two seasons. They've been a bad program for many years. DePaul is playing Illinois this year. He's decommitted late last night, decommitted from DePaul. And that's a blow to DePaul.
So he falls into the next recruiting class.
That's what he wants to do. Right now, in the Rivals has him ranked in the 2018 class as the 66th best player in the country.
And that's about as high as anybody. Illinois is only recruiting a couple players that high. Castleton's not ranked that high, for instance.
Yeah, I know John Gross Tiger Campbell at one point.
Well, sure. I think, yeah, absolutely. I mean, everybody will be after him now. He's throwing, but you don't know what's really happening. You know,
no.
He might have an idea what he's going to do.
And then Dee Brown was officially hired yesterday. It was made official yesterday at UIC. Head coach Steve McClain made that announcement. So Dee Brown, now a full-time assistant, can recruit, can coach, and it's a great opportunity for him. It's something he's really, truly wanted for a while.
Yep, that'll start him up the ladder.
Yep.
And he'll climb.
Oh, I would say so, just his personality. And it'll take him a while to get used to the recruiting aspect, but in terms of his personality with recruits, that's not going to be a problem at all for him. Lauren, I don't know if anybody should try to play Duke in their 2018 class.
It's ridiculous.
It's Cameron Reddish committed there last night, number three ranked player in the country. He's a 6'7" small forward. Duke also has two other top 10 prospects for next season. Trey Jones, at number 10, pledged earlier this month and last month, and number one prospect Marvin Bagley III also signed last month, and he's playing this year. So, I mean, that team, he'll probably be gone next year, but Mike Krzyzewski keeps loading up year after year.
Well, I think that is probably the great weakness of the NCAA in general, and that is that the top athletes, I guess, it's just as like the top potential lawyers go to Harvard and Princeton, the top players, the football, basketball, tennis, golf, whatever sport, they all wind up going together. The top ones go together. And I don't blame them, but it's something that's bothersome to me about the fact that it's really hard, and particularly, I guess, since I'm at Illinois, in trying to climb out of the hole that you're in, because it can't influence kids to top players want to join top programs. And if you're not a top program, how do you recruit? It's a chicken and the egg. Which comes first?
Yeah, you can't win games without top players, and it's really hard to get the top players when they're going to Duke and Kentucky and Kansas and North Carolina year after year after year.
Well, they all want to be one and done, and if you can sell them on the idea that you'll be here 1 year and then you'll be a pro, you can do that every year, and that's what's happening. Duke has gone that way. They're the new Kentucky.
I think Kentucky and John Calipari might be the best at that, would you say?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's obvious, but I mean, I think Duke's starting to fall into that category. A couple of these players that Duke has just recruited, you know they're only going to be there 1 year.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, a couple other quick notes before we take our first time out. Two marquee college football games tonight, later on today anyway. Alabama takes on number three Florida State down in Atlanta. Number 11 Michigan takes on number 17 Florida today as well. So a couple of good games, but plenty of college football games all over the country. Wanted to mention the Illinois volleyball team off to a 4-0 start after defeating Kent State last night in straight sets yesterday afternoon, I should say, in the Cardinal Classic down in Louisville. The Illini are back in action at 9:30 this morning. You can hear that game online only against number 24 Western Kentucky. Then again tonight against Louisville at 6:30. That match will be here on DWS. So a couple tough matches today for Chris Thomas in his fifth and sixth games of his career here at Illinois.
Yeah, they're off to a really good start. Of course, they haven't really played a top team yet, and it's interesting that he's kind of made some changes at the corners, which was the problem that Illinois had before. They needed some really big, strong killers on those corners, and because you're running into so many top teams that have people that are jumping out of the gym and hitting straight down on you from the corners, and if you don't have that, it's hard to survive.
We'll see how they do in those two matches today, again down in Louisville in the Cardinal Classic. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. More Illini football coverage to get you ready for this game. We'll be on the air until 9:30 today. The phone lines once again 356-9397. The text line, Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Jim Dye coming up at 8:30 here in the booth. The News Gazette Media's opinions editor, and at 9 o'clock, former Illini football player, linebacker Jay Lehman, works for the Big Ten Network, will join us at 9 o'clock. We'll come back and we talk some Cardinals baseball as well. They looked down and out last night, but they had a great rally. We'll talk about that as well. That's coming up next here on Saturday Sports Talk on DWS.
Keep up with the Illini and more during the week on Sports Talk, Tuesday through Friday evenings at 5 o'clock right here at DWS and streaming online at WDWS.com.
hit the other way, slicing towards the corner, and it's a fair ball. This game is tied. Garcia to second, racing to third. He has tied it up, save at third. Out to left, base hit, Colton Wong. The Cardinals have the lead. Wong delivers, 6-5 St. Louis. They've come all the way back. Lots of room to the right side for DeJong. Rips it, fair. Into the corner. Wong could walk home. Bader racing to third. He will score. And the Cardinals have put up a three spot here in the top of the ninth. And it's 8-5. The 2-2 out to left. This may go. It's at the wall and it's gone. Steven Piscotty.
I think our veterans do a terrific job of letting them know in spring training because we see most of them. And we throw them in and they get to play a lot and we don't necessarily treat them like second-rate citizens. We throw them in and let them know at some point you're going to have to do your part to help us win.
I mean, it makes it more fun. You know, pressure is something that you kind of make up in your head, but obviously it's there. But again, it's fun to play under pressure. I'd rather play under pressure than, you know, be out of a race, kind of, you know, not really playing for anything.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Those highlights courtesy of Fox Sports Midwest. The Cardinals trailed 5-2 late in that game, going to the seventh inning last night, tied it in the eighth, and then scored six runs in the ninth to win it 11-6. Go to 2 games over .500. They remain 6 games behind the Cubs and 4 games out of the wild card. That was also Mike Matheny and Harrison Bader's first career home run in the major leagues. And Lauren, that was a really a critical win if they want to stay in the wild card race, now just 4 games back of the wild cards, the last wild card spot.
Well, you can't give up. You got the whole month of September, but they've got a long way to go. What's interesting to me is that Bader hit a two-run homer early, and Piscotty hit a big home run late, and they weren't even on the team a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, Bader just rejoined, and Piscotty, of course, had been hurt and been in and out. And I don't know. Their outfield situation is unbelievable. I mean, they got 6 or 7 outfielders, and I can't figure out who they're going to keep and who's going to play.
And those trade pieces in the offseason?
Sure. Absolutely.
No, which ones, though?
Can't keep them. Well, that's the choice. That's
yeah.
I mean, nobody knows which are, you know, you got to – I don't know. I guess Grichuk is solidifying himself just as Wong is on the infield, I think, for next year. What do you think?
I think so. I think one guy that is had a bad start to the season coming around is Dexter Fowler. He had a huge contract. He wasn't going anywhere. But I think
he's got to stay.
Yeah, he's got to stay, but he's hitting better.
Yeah,
he's doing a lot better. Still Grichuk, and I still don't know about his average.
Well, his average is way down, and he strikes out way too much. But, I don't know. Grichuk gives you so much otherwise. He gives you so much speed on the bases. He gives you, he's not a great defender, but he's got speed in the outfield. I mean, that speed counts everywhere, and he's got a tremendous power. What if he started making contact like DeJong has? You know, I mean, the ball goes out. When they hit it, and by the way, he hit the ball over the fence the other night to win the game, and the center fielder caught it.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, he's –
That's true.
I don't know. I'm not going to worry about his average right now, but I do worry about it for the future. And they've just got too many outfielders, and it's too unsettled.
Tommy Pham. I mean, I think he's had a great season.
Oh, he's number one.
Yeah, I don't think it's close the way kind of season he's had. And he is a pretty honest interview after games. I don't know if you saw what he said about the Mike League trade the other day, and he didn't really hold back very much. He was very disappointed and was honest with it about it, and he's...
Well, you should be disappointed, and Everybody's disappointed. I'm disappointed the way he pitched.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my disappointment. I mean,
After about mid-May, anyway.
Let me just say this. They finally brought Flaherty up, and he didn't pitch very well yesterday, but I wish they'd have done that a month ago.
Sure.
I wish they'd have gotten rid of Leak a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
So... You know, maybe, you know, you say they're 4 games out. What if they're 2 games out? You know, what if they'd won a couple of those games? Mm-hmm. And now you got a real chance. And again, I think I might be inaccurate on this statement, but in late August in 2011, they were 9 games out.
It was 10 games out of the wild card and 10 and a half behind Milwaukee, or flip-flop that, in August 24th. 24th or 25th. And
so you can't give up. That's the point.
No, you can't.
I mean, what? They're four games back, and they've been playing terrible, and they're barely, you know, they're fighting to stay over 500. But the point is that when it all comes down to it, you know, here we are in September, and within 4 days you could be in tied for the, you know, for the
second
wild card.
Yep, second wild card spot. And, you know, they're only six games out of the division, but the Cubs, they've won five in a row. They've got a great second half record. You know,
they're really rolling, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're starting to get some interesting pitching, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, the thing that I was concerned about with the Cubs as far as the playoffs is concerned is that their starting pitching was too shaky. But now it's starting. It's starting. And when Lester comes back, they may be pretty. They may be pretty solid going into the playoffs.
He hasn't been very good this year.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say
compared
that.
I'm comparing him to his old self. That's what I'm doing.
I heard all this about different pitchers that they have. But listen, the Cubs are going to be a threat when they get in there
because
right now they're pitching better. Hendricks pitched pretty good,
mm-hmm.
and I just think that I think Lester will be fine.
The guy that I railed on early in the season, Jake Arrieta, he's doing really well.
Yeah, I'll say. You figured that out, huh?
I don't know if he was – I mean, because he was not good in the first month and a half
he's
of the season.
He's always better at the second half of every season.
He was really good all season 2 years ago and most of the season last year, but he was down at times. But he was not – ERA was over four early in the season. He wasn't anywhere near what he was the last 2 years, but he is really good right now.
It doesn't matter what you were before. It only matters what you are
now.
And the 1st of October.
Oh, yeah. Well,
1st of October. That's when the playoffs mm-hmm. are.
And that's
the only thing that matters.
And they're putting it together right now. And
we'll see.
And the team that was easily the hottest team in baseball lost five in a row before winning last night, and that's the Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw is back, though. And so they'll need him. But they, you know, there's still 92 and 41, whatever they are.
You really hit a wall lately, though, for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, sometimes you just...
I'm not following them close enough. They play too late.
No. Well, I don't think they're going to break the all-time wins record now with 41 losses. They can lose five more times the rest of the year, and I don't envision that happening. We're live at Memorial Stadium, season opener, just a couple hours away, two and a half hours away to be exact. The Illini and the Ball State Cardinals. Chase Crouch is the starting quarterback here in 2017. He played a game and a half last year. Let's hear from Lovie Smith and Nick Allegretti and their thoughts on Chase Crouch. He's well-liked by his teammates for many reasons, but Lovie Smith and Chase Crouch, or Nick Allegretti, are very high on Chase Crouch.
If you're just talking to defensive coaches in general, they would rather play a quarterback that's in the pocket most of the time. Once you bring in that extra guy, a quarterback that can run the football, it's a totally different animal now. We have that with Chase. Chase Crouch, of course, we like what he can do throwing the football, but if that breaks down, we can have production from his legs.
Chase loves to talk. He loves to talk because he can back it up. I mean, you look at him, he's a 230-pound quarterback. He's not afraid to run someone over if he needs to. Chase likes to talk a little bit. That's fun as an O-line. O-line, there's always a little bit of talk going on, so it's fun to see a quarterback join in on that.
Welcome back here. That's Nick Allegretti and Lovie Smith on Chase Crouch. And, Lauren, Chase Crouch is, you know, Chase is a very important part of this team, and his running ability is going to be key. What we don't really know is the passing ability in terms of, you know, multiple games of seeing him pass the football, because the Rutgers game he couldn't pass most of it because his shoulder was injured, and he passed a little bit against Purdue, but, you know, we'll have to see how he can pass the football here and if he can get that done.
Like every quarterback, you have to wait and see what they we didn't know about Juice Williams till we saw him in games. We didn't know about Shieldhouse till we saw him in games, and we got another one. We won't know until we see him in games in multiple games. You just can't tell about quarterbacks from practice.
No, you can't. Yeah, you really can't. It's just until you see a real defense.
I see one disturbing thing from practice, and that was how well he passed when it was 7-on-7 and how it changed when there were 11-on-11. When you put those four extra linemen in there and you get a pass rush involved, he's getting some passes blocked, which he never gets blocked when you're on 7-on-7, right?
No.
So my point is that he's got to learn. There is so much to quarterbacking, like it takes time to learn to read defenses. They're not going to stand in one place. Ball State's going to move around. You've got to be able to react to what they do, and that takes experience.
Well, we'll see what he does. But in the backfield, Kendrick Foster, the experienced guy returning, Keyshawn Bond, long since transferred, got some younger guys, Rayvon Bonner, Mike Epstein. You know, back to the not tackling thing, those guys haven't been tackled at this level, and, you know, we'll have to see how they play, but they're going to have to be key players for the running backs, because Kendrick Foster won't be able to do it by himself.
Reggie Corbin probably won't play, yep. Right? I mean, isn't that what we think? I mean, there's nothing official on it, but it's doubtful that he's going to play, right? And he was the number two behind Kendrick last year.
Yep.
So I think it falls back on Mike Epstein, probably as the backup.
And I know the coaches raved about him. You know, offensive coordinator Garrett McGee, you know, several weeks ago was raving about Mike Epstein and his ability. So we'll have to see what he does. But Kendrick Foster missed some of training camp, but he's healthy now and ready to go. And he got hurt in the Northwestern game last year, had a minor injury there. But mm-hmm. They're going to need Kendrick to stay healthy because you need that experience back.
Yeah, he's really quick going through the line. He hits it hard. And they're going to try to run the football. They're going to do some option stuff. They've got a quarterback that can do those things.
Well, once again, the offensive line, something you focused on here in the offseason, the makeup of the offensive line, and Larry Boyd we touched on earlier in the program. But what do you see shaking out as we move along in the season here when things start to settle down and how that line's going to look?
Well, the disappointing thing to me is that the two veteran guys, Fagan and Solomon, have been pushed back. And right now, obviously, Boyd is going to start. We've got two solid guys, Allegretti and DeLauro. And other than that, I don't know, Meganson has been moved from guard to tackle, and I'm not sure how effective he is in the open out there. Tackle, the difference between guard and tackle is the tackle has to block the defensive end. And those defensive ends have moves. And if you're not quick with your feet, it's a problem. And that'll be a concern for me at that position. I just think they've got to protect the quarterback and allow him to have time to pass. I think Boyd is okay at the guard spot, but he's just learning. And I think that, Doug Kramer, we think he's going to be okay. He's a redshirt freshman, and they moved him to center. And if he makes it this year, that's great because he'll have three more years to start. And they're all around 300 pounds or more. I mean, Allegretti's up to 320 and Boyd 340. So Illinois is big enough. It's just a case of whether they're good enough.
We'll find out as the season moves along. We'll take a timeout. Coming up next, News Gazette Media Opinions editor Jim Dye going to join us here in the booth from Memorial Stadium, getting ready for Illini football 2.5 hours away. Wrote a column this week on the War Chant, which, as everyone knows, it was about 8 days ago. Came out, the War Chant will no longer be played on third downs here at Memorial Stadium. That's coming up next here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for joining us. We're live from Memorial Stadium here in Champaign as the Illini football team getting ready for the 2017 season, taking on Ball State to kick things off here this season. The Ball State Cardinals, 11 o'clock this morning is kickoff as the Chase Crouch starter era gets underway for the Illini. Lovie Smith in year two. Joining us in the booth here, News Gazette Media Opinions editor Jim Dye. Jim, good morning. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad, sir. Well, I'm just going to read the first sentence of your column this week. At the rate he's going, University of Illinois Chancellor Robert Jones is likely to be the first inductee into the Nancy Cantor Hall of Fame. That's a bold statement there to begin with.
Well, I guess I was trying to get people's attention.
By
reminding everybody of Nancy Cantor, who we all know and didn't love, and to be followed by her successor in the anti-chief of Follies, Robert Jones. So, yeah, he's made quite a splash this week.
It was pretty clear from your column, Jim, that you were not pleased with the way this was handled and dealt with from the administration level.
Well, I'm not sure it was really handled. I'd say the way it was mishandled. First of all, they tried to sneak it past everybody, and then after that kind of fell apart by by virtue of some really unwise decision-making by an unnamed AA official.
By the way, they're really trying to protect whoever that is.
Well, they ought to do that. They ought to do that.
I mean, it's got to be embarrassing for them, but it's got to be nobody. They don't want anybody to know who that was.
So anyhow, after it leaked out, then they proceeded to kind of dissemble and obfuscate and otherwise not tell the truth, and then they kind of got backed into the corner, and they finally said, "Yeah, we did it. We want to be. Somebody didn't like it, so we got to get rid of it. But we'll never do it again. We're never gonna make another concession ever again, unless, of course, we do."
That's what has everybody worried.
Sure,
I think
should
more
be.
So than anything, it's a concern about the future of the 3-1.
Well, absolutely. I mean, if something as innocuous as the song from Captain Kangaroo, if that is to be deemed intolerably racist, then how can this 3-1 stand? And after that, I mean, the Fighting Illini, why shouldn't that go? I mean, and then let's rename the state while we're at it.
Well, I don't know what to say. I just the thing that concerns me is that we have a football game today.
Sure.
And the entire week leading up to it has been kind of disheveled, at the very least, because of this thing. And I'm telling you, I'm still getting texts and emails. It's incredible the amount, how this upset people. I mean, to the point of some being irrational about it.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of irrational reaction to the whole Chief thing, but it's a result of the death of 1,000 cuts. You know, people, you punch them a couple times and they don't react. By the time you get to the 7th or 8th, and they really start to get agitated, and it's just one more concession in a long-standing but failed effort to appease those who are permanently aggrieved and can never be appeased, and respond to a concession by by reiterating all their demands.
And I've had 3 people approach me about getting the Chief back. Ways that they're going to get. We got the powwow idea. We got different things that, and I just keep saying it's not coming back. But there are people that will not give up.
Well,
and I went to an event yesterday, the quarterback club, can you sit down with me a couple minutes, Lauren? I want to just explain, you know, what we're doing. And they're doing things, but I don't know if it'll ever get anywhere.
Well, I don't see how it could when you've got the president and the chancellor.
Is the president really in league with the chancellor on this? Because he indicated he didn't know it was happening even.
Well, I call that implausible deniability.
Yeah, I know you do. That's a good line.
You know, that's just not credible. And if it was, and if it is credible, it was by design. Kind of like the head of the mafia family doesn't want to know what the capos are doing. Don't tell me about it. Just go do it. And, you know, they view this as they're not really from here, and they view this as just more trouble than it's worth. And so they're probably ready to pitch the whole thing just so they get certain people on campus to be quiet. And I think that will be their position going forth. I mean, I can't imagine that B. Joseph White was really all that disappointed when the NCAA came down with their edict and said, basically, get rid of the Chief.
Well, it's been a terrible headache for the president.
Yeah,
years, it's been a terrible headache.
Yeah, but it's only a headache if they allow it to become a headache. I mean, if you take a position that this is not up for discussion, then it's not up for discussion. And if people on campus want to protest, well, that's fine. They have a First Amendment right to protest. But, you know, you had the problem that's been a terrible headache is because so much of the campus infrastructure, you know, people like Nancy Canner and various assistant, you know, deans and provosts and assistant provosts and the secretary to the assistant of the assistant of the assistant of the provost.
Here and gone.
They're all working on getting the Chief gone. And so that makes it a headache. But, you know, that's the way it is these days.
News Gazette Media Opinions Editor Jim Dye joining us here in the booth at Memorial Stadium as the Illini football season gets underway in about just under 2.5 hours. I just think that having the conversation, people are wanting to bring the Chief back. I mean, you never say never, but in this case I'm going to say never. There's absolutely no shot that ever happens. And I'm not sure why people 10 years later are still hopeful that it might happen.
It just shows you the degree of resentment over what happened, and that resentment is never going to disappear. Just like those who don't like the Chief, like they're never going to disappear. I mean, it's a battle. Somebody wins and somebody loses. And right now, the Chief people are getting creamed.
Well, it's interesting, you know, that it's short-term people making decisions for people who are here for their lives,
right,
for their lifetimes. And so you got the vast majority of people who are here forever. They have jobs here. They live here. And they fell in love with the chief, not because this has nothing to do with the authentication of the chief. It has to do with the camaraderie and the closeness and the friendships that were developed, the feelings that were developed over a period of time when they were younger and when the chief simply, there was something exhilarating about him, and they miss that.
Yeah, they do. And why shouldn't it be? I mean, if you've seen the chief do his dance at halftime, it's exciting. The band music is terrific. People get excited and clap along. I mean, it is one of those unifying moments, even for visiting fans.
Yeah.
Visiting fans came to see the chief as well as their teams. So the chief was an additional enjoyment for them as they watched their teams beat Illinois.
But back to the war chant, the fact that now we're looking at the score. We're here in the press box here, and we're looking at the scoreboard over here, and the scoreboard is going to be the thing that's going to get everybody fired up because the chant wasn't doing it. Now, one thing that Martin O'Donnell –
I thought the chant was much more effective at the basketball games prior to tip-off.
Yeah. And
I thought that was really exciting.
And also, Martin O'Donnell said this, and I didn't realize – he said that this is what we came out on the field with.
Yes, it is.
That's what they – the chant was the thing – when the team came out on the field, that was what they that was what they came out to.
They did, and they stopped it for a year or two, and then they brought it back a couple of years ago. And so this it stopped coming out of the tunnel. But, yeah, last season they came out of the tunnel, the war chant, and now they're going to come out something different.
Well, it was the big drum beat.
Yeah.
So now the anti-chiefs resent the drum beat. And so what's the next drum beat going to be?
And you're telling me the drum beat doesn't have any Indian background.
Well, it's just a drum, you know.
Well, I know, but I mean, you're saying it came from Captain Kangaroo.
Well,
so
yeah. Powwow the Indian boy on Captain Kangaroo.
Powwow the Indian boy?
Yes. Yeah,
so it did have Indian background.
Well, yeah, but not. Oh, okay. Powwow is just a fictional figure.
Okay.
Jim Dye in the booth with us here at Memorial Stadium. And the thing that, you know, we've touched on it, but the 3-1 of the Fighting Illini, I mean, they're emphatic this isn't going anywhere. But it's just like when coaches say they're not leaving, well, they're not leaving until they leave. But I just have a hard time believing that the 3-1, which predates the chief, and the Fighting Illini nickname, which has absolutely nothing to do with anything with the chief whatsoever. I mean, if people can go look it up and read it, I see no reason for those two to go anywhere whatsoever.
Well, what the chancellor said was there has been no systematic discussion of getting rid of the chief, and he said there is no plan. He didn't say there has been no discussion and there will be no discussion, or there will never be a plan. He said there. We had a discussion, but it wasn't systematic, and there is no plan now. But there,
well, he's saying they haven't voted, and the votes, he's got all the votes.
That's right, and that's the other thing he said. I made this decision, but by God, I did it collectively.
Can you do both?
Well, you can say he did.
He did it collectively by telling the others what he was.
Well, voting. Here's the. I think we can launch a counterattack by saying it was a communal decision, and we don't need any communists around here.
Lauren, what did you say last week when you said if the 3-1 gets taken away, people would be with streets and with clubs?
Well, it would be marching with like they did in the Frankenstein movie. Everybody would be marching.
Yeah, I don't think that.
Well, they'd certainly be complaining, but if they take that away, and when they take that away, everybody will just be grumbling again, and it'll be just one more deep cut. And what can you really do other than complain about it? I mean, they've made their decision. They don't care what people think about it. They only care about the opinions of what a few people think about it.
I tell you who's been taking a big hit this week, the Alumni Association.
Well,
oh, man.
Sure.
I mean, they're getting hit from left and right. I mean, it's amazing to me what's happening. I wish I've got so many texts. I mean, everywhere I go, I went to the quarterback club yesterday. I went to the rebounders, up the day before. And it's just universal in the crowd. I mean, everybody's talking about it. Everybody's concerned. I say everybody. And those groups are, of course, obviously different because they are really close Illini fans.
Mm-hmm. Got a text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line from the 901 area code. Why haven't they taken aim at Oski Wow Wow? Wouldn't that be more offensive than the war chant? That's a text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line.
Well, something is only offensive to the extent that people decide it's offensive. And so, Oski Wow Wow, I suppose, that sounds pretty horrible to me. I don't know what you guys think about it, but
Bill also texted, I'll bet the meetings to censor the music was one-sided. I'm sure the band director said he would like to get rid of the music that marked the entrance of the team. I'm sure Ken said he would like to face the music talking to outraged fans. Bet Josh loved this. Don't worry about being too stupid to be offended. The chancellor will be offended for you. Well, that's Bill on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line.
Could I make a point? What this is about, it's not really so much about the war chant, and it's not really so much about the 3-1 or whatever. It's about the desire of the anti-chiefs to make everybody forget that Chief Alaniwek ever existed and ensure that they never think about him again. This is kind of a massive exercise of mind control or attempted mind control. We don't want you to ever think about that, and since you do think about that, we are really angry, and we want you to take steps to ensure that nobody thinks about that. Well, it's kind of hard to control what people think about, particularly when it comes to emotion. And so that's the war that the anti-chiefs are waging. And, you know, and they don't really succeed in terms of getting people to forget about the chief. As a matter of fact, they have a lot of success in reminding people how much they liked or loved or respected or enjoyed the chief. But they have been successful in getting these last vestiges, they call it, the last vestiges of Chief Alaniwek symbolism.
But you know, the 3-1 is almost more important than the chief, almost, because it's the music.
Sure.
And as long as you've got that music and everybody shouts chief at the end of it, we all know what we're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And they know what we're thinking.
Well, and also, you know, along with the chanting the chief, people wear, you know, Chief Alaniwek gear. And the anti-chief people want that to stop, and they want the university just to stop, you know, allowing the gear to be made. But
yeah,
they have to keep the trademark active, because then someone else could take it over, and then they could mass produce the stuff.
You bet. And if they gave it up, boy, wouldn't they mass produce it?
So I don't know why the people who are anti-chief keep telling the university to give it up, because then there'll be millions more pieces of chief gear than there is right now.
Well, the explanation is because they are as irrational in their hatred of the chief or resentment of the chief as some of the most extreme pro-chief people are. They don't want anybody to ever think about the chief. They want to tell people how they can dress. They want to be dictatorial in setting the rules, which is to say, no chief vestige ever. And they even argue against themselves. They're arguing against themselves when they say, ban the merchandise and do so in a way that ensures more merchandise than ever is produced and sold. That's arguing against yourself. That makes no sense. That makes about as much sense as Chancellor Jones saying that it was a collective decision, but I made it, or Josh saying, this is as far as we'll go, but we welcome all discussions with people who don't like the chief.
Wouldn't you really like to know what Josh really thinks?
Yes.
I mean, I know what he has to say, but, you know, if he walked in here right this minute and said, I really believe in doing away with the war chant, I really think it's the right thing to do, I wouldn't believe him. I just wouldn't believe him.
This is the business he chose. Let's put it that way. Just like in The Godfather, this is the business he chose. He wants to be the AD here, and it comes with the territory.
Yeah.
And does he? I suppose maybe he would just like the whole thing to go away so it make his job easier, but it's not going to.
Let's take the phones here. Charlie in Champaign, good morning, sir. How are you?
I congratulate you on your article, and it was right on the money. And I just wanted to relay something to you. And both all of you, some time ago when Nancy Cantor was the chancellor, I represented the Save the Chief Society at the Board of Trustees and talked about 10 minutes over to Springfield one morning, and I related to the history of the chief of being a derivative from a memory of the former tribe that existed at one time, but more important, how it a lot of the lore of the chief came from scouting and the Order of the Arrow, which is part of senior scouting and which honors manhood and all that. And it's a very high-minded thing. And then I told him about the support that the various tribes had given, you know, the chief over the years, and with costumes and help with the dance and even coming and participating, and that they were really in favor of us until, you know, this one episode started 20-odd years ago. And it was amazing how I had the president of the board at the time, which I shall not name. He said, Do you really believe all that stuff you just said? And I said, why do you say I would make it up? I said, it's the truth. And everything about the chief was always about honoring Native Americans and very respectful. And it's so absurd. I can't explain it. You know?
Well, there you get into the whole debate again.
Thanks,
about
Charlie.
What chief supporters say is our effort to honor the Native American tradition.
Yeah.
You know, the opponents say, no, it's just a silly caricature that I guess is meant to demean. And so
right.
what's the middle ground between those two positions?
Yeah.
There isn't any.
Well, they go back to the fact, the article, recent editorial by our friend at the Tribune, Shannon Ryan, you know, talked right away about mascot. Well, the chief never was a mascot.
You know, Charlie, you'll never convince the people that say mascot. As soon as they say mascot, the discussion's over.
Oh, I know that. I know that.
Because the chief was a symbol, and it was never a mascot, and they say it was, and that ends the discussion because you can't go any further than that.
Well, you can control the debate by controlling the language. And so if you say something that is a symbol as a mascot, you started off right off the top creating a situation of intentional caricature or demeaning.
Well, you've discounted the whole subject because you've made it less than reliable. So, Jim and Lauren, thanks for your efforts.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie. Have a good one.
Bye bye.
All right. Well, Jim, we could go on and on about this, but we got to run. Appreciate you coming to the booth this morning. And
do we have a second here?
Yeah, sure.
I just want to tell Lauren how upset I am
that
you guys had a discussion about the Cardinals and you didn't invite me to participate.
Oh, now, I'm sorry.
I'll tell you, that's pretty upsetting.
If you would have got here early enough.
The reason I didn't is because you went to sleep last night.
I did.
You didn't see the ninth inning rally.
I did not see that. I was upstairs reading, listening to the game, and I thought Flaherty did a really nice job in the first inning. We should have pulled him after the first inning. And, I'm glad. Maybe that's a sign.
I don't know, but I'm encouraged because Mike reminds me they're only four games out of the second wild card, and that's all that matters.
Okay, I only have one more thing to say. All hail Chief Osceola.
Okay, that's right.
Maybe next time you get here early enough, you can join us on the Cardinals discussion.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love that.
All right, well, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more Saturday Sports Talk from Memorial Stadium here on DWS.
After a busy day of football today, it'll be Illinois volleyball coming up tonight at 6:30, Illinois and Louisville. Dave Lone has the play-by-play tonight at 6:30.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. We're live from Memorial Stadium here in Champaign. Kickoff, 2 hours and 4 minutes or so away, as the Illini football team begins the 2017 season, year two under Lovie Smith. They take on the Ball State Cardinals, do the Illini, and the Cardinals coming up a 4-8 season last year. Did not have a very good season whatsoever. Got to a good start, but did not finish very well. But they got a quarterback, 6'6", 225 pounds, Riley Neal, and then they got a running back, James Gilbert, who is pretty talented, had nearly 1,400 yards on the ground last season. Riley Neal for the Ball State Cardinals, as I mentioned earlier in the show, had 12 interceptions last year, but he threw for 2,500 yards and 13 touchdowns. So he does have experience. And so, completion percentage 61.4 for Riley Neal. And Riley Neal also ran for 540 yards. He lost 125 on the ground, so a net 540 yards on the ground. So he can also run. So 6'6", 225 pounds, as we mentioned earlier, Lauren could run. And we'll see if the Illini defense could tackle him if he gets out in the open field.
Yeah, the Illini are starting without the three outstanding defensive ends that they had last year. And in order to replace them, they moved two players from linebacker. Crawford's going to start, James Crawford. He's been a defensive back and a linebacker in his career at Illinois. And what I'm getting around to is that they're giving away a lot of size at the defensive end position. Anasea has missed the last 2 years of play after transferring in as a junior college transfer, so he hasn't played. He's never played college football, and he hasn't played the last 2 years at all. So, and he's going to start, and he looks like a pretty good player, but we won't know until we see. I mean, we're kind of in an area of uncertainty. Ball State is 3-24 against the Big Ten. They beat Indiana in 2011 and 2012, which isn't too far ago. And of course, Illinois lost to Western Michigan last year, so Illinois's had some problems with MAC teams, and This is a game, you know, that Illinois came out as originally. I think that Illinois was as much as 11-point favorite in this game several weeks ago, and now it's down to 6 or 7, which would indicate that it's closing because there's a feeling that Ball State may be, based on you know what gamblers think, Ball State has a better chance than maybe they thought earlier. I think all this publicity about how many freshmen Illinois is playing would affect the people in Vegas. That would affect me. If I'm in Vegas, I don't care. You know, I have no geographical concerns. I have no concerns about anything other than trying to pick the spread. And the spread has come down quite a bit.
These two teams last met in 2007, the Rose Bowl season. The Illini defeated Ball State 28-17 here at Memorial Stadium. It's the only other time the two teams met. So the second all-time meeting here today. Of course, this game right here on DWS and our sister station, Light Rock 97.5 WHMS. And you can also see the Big Ten Network. Jay Lehman's going to join us here in about 10 minutes or so in the booth. He's next door for the broadcast today.
This is a typical game that we would normally have in the Big Ten across the board. You know, Big Ten teams playing lesser teams. Mm-hmm. But I'm just fascinated by what's happening in the SEC this year. Have you looked at the schedule today? It's unbelievable. Alabama's playing Florida mm-hmm. State.
Yep. Florida's, that's the marquee game easily for this weekend.
Florida's playing Michigan. I mean, they're opening. It's an opening game for those two. LSU's playing BYU. South Carolina's playing North Carolina State. Texas A&M against UCLA. That's a tough game. I mean, there's going to be teams knocked out. There's going to be losers in all these games, right? And then you got next weekend, you got Auburn against Clemson, which is a big one. And then you got Georgia against Notre Dame, which is a huge game for Notre Dame.
The SEC has been doing this for a while, opening with big-time opponents. They are the outlier, if you will, in terms of playing high. Alabama does this on a regular basis. So the SEC opens up against big-time opponents, and Nick Saban, he wants it. I mean, because he, of course, at the same time, he plays a high school team late in the season. But, I mean, they want to open up, and I think tonight's game has been talked about for months. Alabama and Florida State, you mentioned Michigan and Florida. That's this afternoon at 2:30. And you know, if I'm in front of a TV tonight, if I'm not asleep, I'll be, you know, it'll be that game, Alabama and Florida State. I'm looking forward to that game. Alabama, you know, they're coming off a last-second heartbreaking loss in the national championship game, but it's Nick Saban. He deleted that probably the second that it happened. So I'm anxious to get that game going. But there's several good games today across the country, and you know, the other night, Thursday night, Indiana's not a high-profile team, but you know, starting a Big Ten game,
yeah, that's very unusual. Yeah. Illinois did that years ago against Northwestern. Actually, yeah. Started the season against Northwestern.
Well, I guess the reason they did it was they were trying to get get the SEC mojo and get some high profile action to start the season, and it worked because the College Game Day was there for IU, and so IU had the lead in the third quarter, but they just could not, you know, hang on. Ohio State just ran away with it down.
By the way, one thing we haven't brought up, and this makes it more difficult for teams like Illinois, is the 9-game Big Ten schedule.
Mm-hmm.
We've been on an 8-game schedule for a lot of years, and playing 9-game, that just means there's one more tough game. Now, the good news is that Illinois has drawn Rutgers and Indiana from the East this year, along with Ohio State. They've got to play 3 games with the East, and the East is clearly a better conference. And if you happen to catch a season where you're playing Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State, that's really going to hurt you in the standings on the West, right? And one reason that Wisconsin's got such a big edge, not only is their talent better, but their schedule is better because they only play one of those top 3 teams this year.
So, yeah, that'll be interesting. And when the Hoosiers come here, what, from watching that game the other night, what do you think in terms of how they match up against Illinois?
Well,
of course, Illinois is really young. We don't know yet, maybe.
We don't know about Illinois, but Indiana's, I would say, clearly better, has been better under Wilson. Now, Wilson's gone, has gone to Ohio State as their offensive coordinator. But I would think that Indiana is ahead of Illinois right now in terms of their squad depth and talent.
Give us your thoughts this morning, 356-9397. Text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Listen live at WDWS.com. Email us, talk@WDWS.com. Do you have one text to get to from the 270 area code? any info from the athletic department on today's projected attendance? I did not ask about that, Lauren, and that's something I really – I don't expect it to be very high for Ball State today.
Well, there'll be two numbers, and we'll only get one of them. There'll be tickets sold, which will be pretty good, and there will be actual people in the stands, which we will find out when the game starts. And I would think that there'll be a lot of tickets. I know a lot of tickets that aren't being used, but we'll see.
Well, and maybe it's such a gorgeous day. It's supposed to be, you know, in the 70s today, and people might just stay in the lots and just kind of enjoy the weather. And it's just perfect. You couldn't ask for better weather. Now, next Saturday night, it's a night game against Western Kentucky. You might see a bigger crowd because people will be able to have all day to kind of enjoy the environment and the atmosphere. And I always like night games here, but Western Kentucky won't be an easy opponent for the Illini.
Oh, well, Western,
not at all.
Western Kentucky would be a favorite in that game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm assuming, unless Illinois, you know, shows something today. What do you expect from the freshmen? What do you really expect?
It depends on the freshmen that we're talking about. Nate Hobbs, you know, I had high expectations for him, but he missed a lot of training camp with mono. Bennett Williams has played really well in the training camp from all the reports, and everybody who's been in practice on a regular basis. I only saw him a couple of times myself.
It's interesting to me that at free safety that he beat out Stanley Green after Green started late last season and was certainly very effective as a tackler. Now, I know there's a concern about pass defense, and I think that Bennett Williams probably gives them a plus in that regard. I'm sure of that. That's why he's in there. I noticed in the Wisconsin game last night, they had 22 interceptions last year. How many years would it take for Illinois to get 22 interceptions if you go back? They had 7 last year, but if you go back, Illinois in the last 10 years, and I think Robert Rosenthal checked this out, didn't he? The number of interceptions, we're just practically last in the country of all schools in interceptions. What does that tell you?
It's that you're not good at getting turnovers and not getting takeaways, and you've got to have takeaways if you're going to win football games. And there are times where Illinois gets almost no takeaways, and that's just not, you're not going to win a lot of games doing that. And they're going to figure that, you know, try to get better at that, bring in more talent. You know, Vontae Davis has been gone a long, long time, and he's still playing in the NFL.
It's a combination of so many factors. It's how strong is the pass rush? How good are the linebackers at covering underneath? How good is the safety at anticipating a pass? I mean, all these things figure in. I saw last night the anticipation. Once Wisconsin got rolling that game, the anticipation of their defense in the secondary was tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. We just don't know enough about our freshmen to be able to say anything. That's why I say, even though Western Kentucky at this point would be a favorite against Illinois in that game here, who knows what it'll be by game time, because we're going to have so much more information after today.
Yeah, definitely will see the freshmen out on the field again. You've probably heard this over and over, 54 freshmen/redshirt freshmen, 22 sophomores. That makes 76 of 101 players are sophomores or younger, 16 juniors, just 9 seniors. Lauren, you've been at this a long time.
I don't know if either senior cornerback's going to play. I know
Dunlap is not playing today.
Right. I just don't know the status of Hayes, because he's been out too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's available, but how much he will play, I don't know. But obviously with Dunlap out and Hayes maybe out, you're going to have a lot of youth in on the cornerbacks, and the cornerback's a key position.
One of the things that surprised me was Tony Adams at cornerback, tore his ACL early last season in high school, right at the beginning of it, and I didn't think he'd be ready to play. He's expected to start today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that surprised me just from the strength of the knee situation. Not from talent. I just didn't know if he would be able to get healthy enough in time, even throughout training camp. I don't think he's going to start. He's still got to work his way back into things. I mean, ACL, it's a long recovery, but he's...
Yeah, well, every injury is a little bit different.
Yeah, but yeah,
and some can come back quicker than others, and we don't know what really... We don't know how... Whether it was a complete tear or whether it was just, you know... Who knows? But in any case, he's been number one for weeks out here, and the coaches believe in him.
How did we get more than an hour into the show without mentioning the return of Mikey Dudek? How did that even happen? Like, I mean, I'm really excited about this, and I forgot about him. I mean, he is a key player for the wide receiving core, which I think there's a lot of depth there, a lot of talent.
You saw what happened in the scrimmage 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, he was sensational. I mean, really, truly sensational. He had about five touchdowns in that scrimmage. And it wasn't a full tackle scrimmage, but,
no.
But he made some great plays.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch as a freshman. Missed the last 2 years with a torn ACL in the same knee, but he's back here for the 2017
season.
Boy,
he looks strong.
Oh, he's
a different player than he was as a freshman. I mean, in terms of his physical build, I mean, his shoulders and chest and strength, he's just really up. I think he can take the beating out there game after game as long as that knee holds up.
Yep, and he's seemed pretty confident out of the practice field this year from what I saw, that he's confident in that knee to cut and move, and so we'll see. It's been about a year and a half since the second ACL tear, so he should be just fine here in 2017. We'll take a timeout. Jay Layman's going to join us. He's in the booth next door today for the game on the Big Ten Network. He'll join us here, former Illini football player, a member of the 2017 10-year anniversary this year of the upset against the Ohio State Buckeyes. We'll talk to Jay Layman coming up next here on DWS. Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. I'm Michael Kenzer. He's Lauren Tate. We're live from Memorial Stadium here in Champaign. The season opener, year two under Lovie Smith, just about an hour and 45 minutes away as the Illini take on the Ball State Cardinals. Ball State went 4-8 last season. Last time these two teams met was 2007.
I got a question for you.
Okay.
What was the biggest first game victory in Illinois history?
You're looking at the media guide over there. I'm going to dig mine out.
I found one.
The biggest opening game victory in school history.
Yeah.
Okay, give me how far back do I need to go?
You need to go back to the season of 1989.
Okay, I was 7 years old, about to turn eight.
You played Southern Cal in Los Angeles. And won 14-13 on two touchdown passes by Jeff George.
Oh, I thought you meant...
In the fourth quarter.
I thought...
First, not home, I didn't say home.
No. I thought you meant, like, the biggest margin of victory.
No. I meant the biggest, most important, most significant win. I would say, you got one to top that?
No, I don't, because, we would have had one to top that had they beaten Missouri one of those times.
Yeah, that's right. That was about six losses there.
How was that in a couple of those games?
One game that really was kind of big at the time and turned out to mean nothing was Zook's first game against Rutgers. They won in overtime.
Yeah,
remember
that game.
They won one more game the rest of that season. So, in fact, they lost the last nine in a row. But most of the games, other than that stretch against Missouri in St. Louis, most of it have been against lesser teams, most of the games. And I can't find anything that approximates the win over Southern Cal, because that was a really stunner. In that the Illini came from 13-0 down and won the game in the fourth quarter. And in most cases, Illinois opened in Bob Blackman's last year, they opened against Iowa at home and beat Iowa 24-6, and they beat Iowa the previous year, and that was also an opener, and they opened against Indiana before that. So when I said there weren't many openers, Big Ten openers, I'm wrong. I mean, there were quite a few back in the 70s.
Yeah, it's something they haven't been doing very much at all, but they want to really get more into kind of more marquee games to start the year. And Indiana had never had college game day at their campus for football anyway, but they wanted to get a piece of that opening night action, and they got it. There was a lot of attention on that game, Ohio State. Indiana tried to get college game day 2 years ago when Indiana was 4-0. Ohio State was number one in the country, defending national champs, and they couldn't get college game day. They made a great effort and nearly got it, but they chose Notre Dame and Clemson instead, which I guess was an okay backup. But so the Big Ten, I think they're going to do more of this, opening night conference games, opening week conference games. I think it's a little odd. I think they will do more of it, depending on the matchups. They're just trying something new, like the Friday night games, which I'm not a fan of, from a fan's perspective anyway. People work on Fridays, and I think it hurts the tailgating atmosphere in the attendance.
Well, it doesn't hurt television, though. That's the thing.
Exactly.
And attendance isn't near as important as television.
You're right.
I mean, it used to be, but not anymore. Not when you're getting $50 million out of the TV distributions. No, sir. No, and they're going to try to find other dates that they can, anything that's an open date. Just like this Indiana, can you imagine the amount of people that watch Indiana play just because they're playing Ohio State on opening day?
Yeah.
On a Thursday?
Yeah, on a Thursday.
On
night.
A Thursday. And I go, and I think about basketball, I checked it, and this is true. Illinois plays basketball this year on all 7 days of the week. Mm-hmm. Monday, Tuesday, right on through.
When's the last time they played a Friday game that wasn't a part of a preseason, early season tournament?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, in conference I'm talking.
Yeah, I don't know.
And so, like, they play those early season non-conference games, like, you know, in November. They play Friday games and Sunday games. But I can't think of a Big Ten conference game on a Friday night in recent memory for Illinois.
Well, I can't answer that one.
Yeah, I don't think there has been one in recent memory. Let's go to the text line, 351-5357. Benny texting the line, I need to open up with bigger opponents, not a MAC school. We take our lumps. We need to be challenged right out of the gate. Well, Benny, I'm going to disagree with you this season. I agree with you maybe moving forward, but I have no interest in a lot of true freshmen playing a big-time opponent for their first time on the field. When you're playing that many freshmen and you got 76-year 101 players as sophomores or younger, I just don't think it's a good move to play Power 5 school to start the season against a really talented Power 5 school anyway. Playing South Florida in 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks. So I think you need to get the freshmen their feet wet a little bit before you start playing some major opponents. So many of them are playing.
The NFL plays 4 exhibitions. Ugh. I mean, that's what this kind of is. I mean, it's kind of an exhibition. It counts,
true.
But I mean, it's almost like an exhibition.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Patriots don't want to play any exhibitions with the ACL tears they've had the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, the preseason games are in the NFL, I mean, you want to play them because there's 90 guys on the roster. You got to figure out who can play, so you need actual games. But, you know, too many key players are getting hurt. That's a discussion for another day. Still waiting on Jay Lehman. He's working at the TV booth over there getting ready for the game, so hopefully he can join us for a few minutes. Coming up at 9:30, Scott Beatty with Fighting Illini Game Day and taking up until 10 o'clock, and then we'll get you Steve Kelly. We'll take you up to the rest of the game. Brian Barnhart in the game, Martin O'Donnell, Kerry Davis, and all those guys, they're all getting ready here this morning to begin another season. Year 2 under Lovie Smith. The Illini football team went 3-9 last year, trying to improve on that here in 2017. You can give us a call, 356-9397, or again, the text line, 351-5357. We'll take a timeout. We'll come up back with more here on Saturday Sports Talk on DWS.
Calling for the end. Another interception, and it's Joe Ferguson in his 45th career game. The redshirt senior from right here in Madison will take it home. The grandson of the former Wisconsin coach and current athletic director, Barry Alvarez, 99-yard pick six, Joe Ferguson.
Welcome back to Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. He's Lauren Tate. I'm Michael Kaiser. Thanks for getting up a little bit earlier for the show today, turning us on about an hour earlier. We're on from 8 to 9:30 when the 11 a.m. kickoffs happen for the Illini football team, which is what's taking place today, an hour and 37 minutes away from the beginning of the 2017 Illini football season. Lovie Smith, been here for about a year and a half, a little more than a year and a half now, and getting things underway. A lot of freshmen will play today, as we mentioned. That pick six, Joe Ferguson for the Wisconsin Badgers, part of their 59-10 win last night over Utah State up in Madison. A great venue. The Badgers had some fun last night, beginning their season 1-0. Wisconsin ranked number 9 going into the game last night. Another Big Ten opponent in action last night, Rutgers 30-14. That highlight, by the way, courtesy of ESPN. Rutgers 30-14 over Washington. And, you know, that was kind of a tighter game early. I didn't get to see it. I was, you know, check the box score, and, you know, Washington had to get a touchdown and take the lead. Rutgers did lead in that game, which is kind of surprising for as bad as they are right now.
Well, I don't know. I think Rutgers might be getting a little better. I mean, the coach has been there now 2 years, and I think that they're going to be a real challenge for Illinois later this season. The thing about Wisconsin, as I watched the game, and they were trailing, and it was a little bit shaky in the beginning, but you know when they started that march and they finally got things settled down, I think it was in the second quarter, they just simply pounded the ball inside time after. There's nothing that you can do. They simply overpower you for the first 3 or 4 yards, and they just kept making first downs and bang, 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 kept driving. And there's just nothing you can do. That's the thing about it's a physical game. And if you're the dominant force up front, if you can control the line of scrimmage, that's what they did. They just ran right into the end zone. Took a lot of plays, but once they established that, the game was over. The score wasn't over, but the game was
over. Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, and Illinois is trying to build the line in the trenches, and it's going to take some time. But guys like Larry Boyd and others is going to help kickstart that.
Yeah, I haven't done a check on it, but I like to know how experienced these Wisconsin linemen are.
Yeah.
These aren't rookies.
No, they're not. Yeah, and you talk about this over and over again, Lauren, that freshman offensive linemen need some time. But Darian Lowe has missed some time. You know, he's another freshman they line are high on, 340 pounds, 6'5", from Rockford. They're high on him, but he's going to need some time to grow as well.
There's something about the coordination once it's established, once each guy knows what they're supposed to do. There's a coordination to the blocking of those five people, plus the tight end. By the way, Wisconsin tight end is the best in the country, Fumagalli. And they've got more than one.
Mm-hmm.
And they scored touchdowns last night out of the tight end position. That is a really good one. Illinois tight ends have just not been productive. By the way, did you see one of the former tight ends had two, doggone it, forgot his name, Lacoste?
Oh, yeah, for the Giants. Former Illini Matt Lacoste.
Two touchdowns.
Two touchdowns in the Giants. It's a preseason game, but so what? He's having some success. The Giants like him a lot. They've kept him on the roster the last couple of years, and he's doing well, and he's producing. And it's great to see that.
He was just another guy here.
Yeah, he was. That's true.
Most of the time, he wasn't a starter.
Did you think Umanao Manui would last in the NFL as long as he did?
No, but he was a good blocker.
God, who's the other tight end still in the league? I forgot. He played for the Jets for a long time.
Yeah, he was the one we recruited out of Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah,
Jeff Cumberland,
Steve Kelly bails us out. Thank you, Steve.
Cumberland, right.
So, well, Lauren, that's going to do it for us today. Wrapping things up, I know you got to get down with Scott on the field, but ready for the opener of the season, and we'll see what happens against the Ball State Cardinals. Again, a lot of freshmen, and we're going to be watching that today to see how they perform, Bennett Williams and Tony Adams and others.
All right, talk to you later.
All right, talk to you later. That's Lauren Tate, Saturday Sports Talk here on DWS. Thanks so much for Jim Dye joining us, News Gazette Media Opinions Editor. Unfortunately, Jay Lehmans was busy in the TV booth and was unable to join us here today. We'll get Jay later on down the season. Thanks for your phone calls and your texts. Most of all, thanks so much for listening today. Thanks to Evan Kahn and Jim Lewis back at the Radio Ranch for running the controls there. Ed Bond up here. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy some Illini football. Scott Beatty's up next with Fighting Illini Game Day here on DWS.